Before we begin, if these real and raw parenting conversations resonate with you, please take a moment to follow or subscribe to the podcast. It's a free service and the best way to make sure that you never miss a story that could really shift your perspective or soften your load is by subscribing. And if you know a fellow parent who might need this today, send it their way because it could be the comfort that they need, that they maybe didn't know they needed. Today's episode is a very special one, a celebration of baby Aurelia turning one. I am joined by our regular guest Jules, who reflects on the powerful journey of Aurelia's first year, from newborn chaos to birthday cupcakes. Together we will explore the emotional shift between your first and second baby, how second-time moms gain confidence and grace and gentler expectations, the power of accepting help and building your own village, how organization and meal planning can restore sanity. And then we're going to talk a little bit about first birthday party stories, from jelly buckets to flower pot favors. So whether you're in the trenches of baby number one or considering baby number two, this is an honest and uplifting episode that looks at what it really is like to grow into motherhood with humor, reflection, and lots of heart. Listen in now.
Welcome to Sense by Megfora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Forer, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we are going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. Today is a very exciting episode. It is a celebration of life and a celebration of following the journey for 1 year of Aurelia. So it's a big warm welcome to our regular guest, Jules. Welcome back, Jules.
Thank you, Meg. Yeah, it is. It is a very exciting day and a day that has absolutely snuck up on us.
Yeah. So she's actually one today. And we
one today.
That's incredible. And we've been tracking her since she was just days old. After your C-section, and I remember very fondly to that episode where I could immediately tell that this was going to be like real life mothering that you and I were going to be about, and it has been an amazing journey. So thank you from me and from everybody who listens into your journey for sharing just so freely with us. It's been amazing, really awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been my pleasure. Thank you. I found it very useful from on a very personal level to process a lot of her journey and mine the second time around, and comparing it to what the first year of life was like with Santiago, because it was very, very different. So I've gotten a huge amount from these conversations personally, not least of all with all of your advice. So I'm also very grateful to you.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. So, I mean, if we look back on the year and to where she is now, what have been the highs, like the moments that you've got that you've really felt like you're winning?
I think that it's difficult to sort of pinpoint specific examples, but I think it's more of a feeling. I think for me, and I hope that this is true for many second time moms, I've just felt a lot more confidence and a lot less second guessing of myself. I think as a first time mom, you can spend a lot of time A, in your head, and B, really struggling to make decisions or to listen to your gut. I think that's another thing. I think the first time around, you perhaps are a bit distracted by all of the noise and all of the advice and not quite knowing which voices to listen to. And I think that you develop that once you've gone through it the first time. So that definitely has been, I would say, the theme of the past year, is just feeling a lot more like I know what I'm doing, I suppose, and also a lot more gracious and giving myself a lot more grace for not getting it right. I think the first time also, I probably beat myself up quite a lot for the mistakes that I made, or, doing something in a way that I would have done differently with more time or energy or perspective. So I think that's the thing that's been a real gift the second time around. And it's been incredibly healing for me, actually, because I think I was very hard on myself when Santi was first born.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, there's this theme that's come up quite a lot in the last 5 years called matrescence, which is this move from being a woman to being a mother. You know, similar to adolescence, massive upheaval. And, you know, when people talk about matrescence, they do think about the hormonal shift, which happens in adolescence as well. And then obviously after, you know, during pregnancy and after. But there's actually a bigger thing around matrescence, and that's that, you know, that it really is this journey into becoming a mother. And like you say, there's a lot of, we harden ourselves because we have these very high expectations, but we don't really know how to navigate it. And maybe second time round, we've done matrescence actually once. We did that with our firstborn. And so if you're a firstborn mom listening, you know, and it's been hard, that I think is a very common theme for most women. And maybe the second time around, it's almost like you're getting a second go. And the only thing you have to deal with and navigate then is the hormones and the juggle, because now you've got two. But at the end of the day, you've actually done the shift. And so you're then able to maybe embrace it more. Because I definitely found it the same, Jules. I found that with my second born, I could just enjoy the journey more than with my first born. There's no doubt. Yeah, so that definitely is a high, I would agree.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that I know that I've spoken to lots of moms, obviously, about their experience of going from one to two versus zero to one. And I would say perhaps more common than not, the second time around is easier for many moms. But for me, it definitely was. And I think it was just, it was quite seamless as opposed to going from zero to one, which was, for me, it felt like taking this life. And maybe it's also to do with being an older mom. I was 37 when I had Santi, and now I was 40 when I had Aurelia. And it was like picking up this incredibly well put together, beautifully smooth running life that I had, and just turning it upside down and shaking everything out and having to start from scratch, essentially. And that was super hard. And I think what was actually so nice the second time around was I'd put all those pieces back together where they had to fit in order to have this new life with a child and a family. And actually, it was really quite seamless to just extend it into having a second child. Lots more admin, lots more logistics, but certainly emotionally easier than the first time.
Yeah. And I mean, there will be some moms who are listening who are first time moms who've had a very seamless journey first time round. And I do know moms who've had that, who actually just fell into motherhood. They had a really easy baby and who slept through the night. And then second time round, they have all hell breaks loose because now they've got the juggle and they've got a difficult temperament. So there's definitely a piece, which is our experience, a piece that might be gender. I have two girls and a boy, and the boy was like a baptism of fire, but he happened to know. So similar to you, like, I don't know how much of that was first child, me not knowing what I'm doing, or the fact that he was a boy. But then, of course, very importantly is the sensory personality as well. And so you do get these sensory babies who are really, really tricky. And a mom gets that the second time round rather than the first. And then she feels like, you know, it's actually a harder lift the second time round. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of all things. And of course, Aurelia's personality, she is probably a settled baby or social butterfly sitting in that sort of space, isn't she?
Yeah, it's definitely somewhere on that spectrum. And, you know, I will say that it may be perhaps a bit simplistic, but certainly from chatting to other moms as well, I think from my perspective anyway, as hard as it was, I would rather have had it that way around, a very, very tough first time and an easier second time, because I can't imagine the shock to the system that must accompany an easy first baby followed by a really tough second baby. So mad respect to those moms, because I think that's a real, yeah, that must really kind of throw you.
Yeah, no, absolutely, for sure. So I'm quite interested, you mentioned something just now. You said that you had put things in place, you know, that everything got shaken out first time around, and then you started to piece things together and put things in place. And maybe the things you put in place with Santi then became things that you could rinse and repeat, and you didn't have to reinvent the wheel then, and it was there. So those, I mean, obviously one of those would be your nanny and probably your husband as well. But there would be other things as well. Maybe it would be quite interesting for other moms, especially first-time moms who are like at the rock face right now. What sort of things would you be recommending to moms to put in place in order to make life a little easier so that people can actually learn from what you did? I mean, something while you think about that, something that I used to do, you know, I mean, there were simple things around Philip and my rhythm with who did which mornings, you know, so I always had the weekends, Saturday and Sunday to sleep in because I did every single night and early morning, you know, during the week because he was working. That was, you know, a simple thing. Another thing was cooking food in batches and really understanding the rhythms of of like, you know, weaning as opposed to like trying to piece it all together. And then there's also the gentleness on ourselves and graciousness that you spoke about. Are there things that you can think of that if you were speaking to your sister right now, she's about to have a baby, what should she be putting in place and can learn from you?
There are two things that pop into my head. And the one is to accept the village. And the second is to make organization your friend. So in terms of the first thing, I know that I didn't struggle with it, but I do know that there are moms who struggle with the idea of letting go and accepting help. I'm a big fan of help, so that wasn't a struggle for me. But it's certainly, I think, the case of expanding your village and your kind of family unit and allowing people to help because they want to. I think that's the other thing. I mean, we all know when our friends have babies, we want to rush over and help as much as we can. And it's no one's doing it under duress. And I think that's for some women, that's a difficult thing to accept, but it's certainly incredibly helpful. And you've mentioned my nanny and obviously Vito's role in the whole thing, but you know, things like when Santi got to a certain age, Vito's mom started taking him on a Saturday afternoon, and she's been doing that now for probably 2.5, maybe 3 years even. And she always has a tea with all the grannies on a Saturday afternoon, and off he goes. And he is the center of attention for 3 or 4 hours. We get a break. It was actually amazing, especially before Aurelia came along, because we could literally just chill on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, what a gift. And, you know, now, for example, she also will collect him on a Monday from school and have him on Monday afternoon. So that those are two huge blocks of time in which I can either rest, which is hugely important, or I can get stuff done, whether it's work or kind of house admin. And those are all the sort of things that really ease the burden, I think. So the village is a big one. Take help from whence it comes.
Absolutely. And before you go into your second one, you know, I think that village is so important. There's a lot with an A-type mom, which I was, and I think you might have been with Santi as well, where we like to do it ourselves. We like to be self-sufficient, and actually accepting help is something that's foreign prior to kids. And so there's a lot of sometimes guilt and sometimes criticism, interestingly, that comes with so-called outsourcing. And I'll never forget a friend of mine coming over from London where she had had her babies on her own and she never had a nanny. And I mean, they had a fairly nice lifestyle in London, but they were in London. They were, you know, South Africans in London. And she came back and she said to me the one day, she said, I really don't like this thing that all these southern suburbs moms talk about kind of outsourcing their childcare. And there was almost this judgment around actually using childcare. And I think whether it comes from the outside and is perceived or whether it comes from internally, it is really, really problematic. And, you know, I think that needs to be reframed. And I think it has been in recent years quite well, in that we were never supposed to raise children in isolation. That just wasn't part of the plan. We lived in villages, and it was very common for a woman to be going out to the rice paddies or wherever she was going to go and, you know, gather, and somebody would be left behind with all the children so that the other woman could go out and do this, you know. And so there were these villages, and often actually multiple children. So you'd have 7 children and the oldest was looking after the youngest, you know. So as opposed to seeing it as an outsourcing of your own responsibility, it's not. It is very much a leaning on the village, which actually is not only good for you, but very enriching for your children. I don't think growing up in isolation with a mom who's stressed, but is, you know, juggling all the balls in isolation is necessarily the best for little ones. So I'm a big fan of nannies. I think I love your idea of the Saturday afternoon. We never did that. And I think that is like a gem, absolute gem. What we did have was we used to go on a Friday night to my mum-in-law and dad-in-law's house in Gordon's Bay. And on the Saturday morning, which was always Philip's turn, because he always did early mornings on Saturdays, his mum would come and take the little ones, and we just didn't see them until they needed a feed. And sometimes when they were older, we didn't see them until lunchtime, you know, so we could lie in. So I do think drawing on that is important. And if you haven't got a village, mums, if you're listening to this and you are isolated in London and you can afford it, then just having a nanny some of the time, or actually having mums who do a kind of a shift where, you know, I'll take 2 people's kids and my child, you know, for Tuesday afternoon, and everybody else gets to do whatever they need, and we rotate it. So I think, you know, leaning on that village is very, very important. Agreed.
Yeah. And creating that space. Yeah. And I think that, you know, to go back to the comment about the judgment around, you know, accepting help, I suppose, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that leads back to the huge pressure that's placed on women to do everything all at once and do it perfectly You know, in a way that obviously there's absolutely zero pressure on their husbands and men in general to do the same. They're not expected to do that. You know, I could go on for hours about that, but I do think that it's the kind of thing that, you know, if one does feel uncomfortable or judgmental about it, you should really kind of reflect on why, because I do think it's largely societal. And I think in reality, you know, there are no prizes for being a worn out mom who is clinging on, you know, for dear life, especially when you're dealing with something like sleep deprivation. So that's, I think that's a huge one. If, you know, for your own personal mental health, then, you know, nothing else. I think that's something that all moms should try and make the space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And your second one I'm very interested in is organization, because there's probably you strike me as the person who's naturally organized. And so executing on that in motherhood is what probably came more naturally to you than it did to other moms. So let's give moms a couple of tips around how organization can work to ease the load.
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
Let's give moms a couple of tips around how organization can work to ease the load.
Well, the biggest thing for me probably in organizational terms, and the thing that really I see such a difference when I don't do it, is meal planning. So even I think before the kids came along, I mean, Vita and I are absolutely massive foodies. So, I mean, eating is the joy of my life. So I have no problem with spending, you know, 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon deciding what I'm going to eat for a week. It's very complicated.
Yeah, and then to the other one that you mentioned, which is very interesting. I mean, you do strike me as a person who probably executes life with a fair amount of organization. So your default strategy to organization makes sense. But there will be a lot of moms who are listening to this who actually are not that organized. And organization, you know, maybe they take, they're a little bit more laissez-faire, take life as it comes. But how did you use organization to your benefit and, you know, to assist you with what you were, you know, with the task of motherhood?
Well, the thing that pops in my head first is meal planning. That's something that I have to make an effort to do, and it's time consuming. But it's one of the things that when I don't do, I really notice how much more difficult it actually makes my life. I think all moms will probably be able to relate to the real task of having to feed people in the family 3-4 times a day. What I do is I try and make time on a weekend to sit down for an hour or two and plan out not only what we are going to eat, which is something that Vita and I have actually always done, because we love eating. It's food is the joy of my life. So, you know, it's not a hardship for me to think about what I'm going to eat for the next week. But it is definitely made more complicated by having two children with slightly different needs. So, for example, obviously Santi's 4, but he's a very picky eater. So as much as I'm committed to kind of challenging him on a daily basis by giving him foods and exposing him to foods he hasn't tried before, I also have to factor in the kind of safe food so that the man is actually nourished on a daily basis. Although Lord knows there are days where he just survives on thin air. And then I have to think about what Aurelia will eat. And luckily she fits more into kind of our diet. So essentially she eats mostly what we will eat. But then again, Vita and I also eat a lot of spicy food, for example, and then I have to kind of factor that in. There's a lot of thinking around feeding and food and groceries that goes into meal planning, but it absolutely smooths the week for me. It means that I literally will do like a big table with each person's name on it and basically what's happening that day from a family point of view in terms of lifts and our extramurals and things like that. And then I've got...
And that's an Excel... When you talk about a table, it's like an Excel spreadsheet, not a physical kitchen table.
Yes, a spreadsheet, yeah. I do it in Canva because, you know, a type, it's got to look pretty. That's why I said table. But it basically, it lays out the plan for the week and then what each child is eating and also what Santi needs in his lunchbox, because we're very fortunate that Tsitsi helps him with the lunchboxes in the morning. So that's kind of one of her tasks in the morning. And then that's all laid out for the week. So I don't have to sit in the morning at 6 o'clock and think, oh, what am I going to put in Santi's lunchbox? And then also make sure that that food is in the house. That's the other thing. You know, once we've made the meal plan on a Sunday, we'll then do the shop always on the weekend, one big shop. And then it means that everything I need is in the house for that week. So that makes a huge difference to my life. It's one less thing to worry about every single day. And I mean, as you know, the list is endless. So to have something big like that taken off your plate just from a little bit of forward planning, I think is really, really useful.
Absolutely. And you know, it's so interesting. There are a lot of kind of business advisors who talk about productivity. And one of the things they say with productivity is they say, if you're juggling a lot of balls, which as we know moms are, then take away the things that require decisions. And actually to that end, Steve Jobs always wore the same clothes, I think every day of his life. He wore a black t-shirt and whatever, you know, and the reason was that when he woke up in the morning, there was no decision-making around what he was going to wear. So he took 5 minutes off his day that everybody else was spending, and it was just, you know, and it gave him back 5 minutes and whatever, and that adds up over a year. And so I think that that preparation and that thinking, you know, that you do for that hour on a Sunday and then do the shop, and then it really will free you up to be able to juggle more balls. So that's really interesting. And I'm sure there are a million moms thinking, oh my gosh, I would love to have access to that Canva board. Or so maybe as part of the show notes, we'll actually just pop in an example of one of your plans, because I think it's a very good idea. I did something that was very, very similar. In fact, part of the way that we built the ParentSense app was actually based on what I did for my children exactly. So I went a step further because I'm an OT. I didn't just do the meals. I did the daily activities as well, so that I knew that if I was out, my amazing maid Nancy would be able to actually know what daily activity had to be done with the little ones as well. So, and that's actually what the ParentSense app does. So when, you know, a mom should be able to just dip in there and go, right, this is my week. It's fully planned. I know what time they're going to sleep. I know what food needs to be bought, create the shopping list on the weekend, and then send it off to themselves. That is how the feeding section works. So that certainly does work well. The other thing that I did was I would create batches of food when they were still in the mushed food stage. So before 6 months, when they're not quite eating baby-led weaning and off the table, if I was making a batch of butternut, I made a big batch of butternut this week, froze it, popped out the cubes and labeled them as the date and butternut. And then the next Sunday I would do sweet potato. And the next week I would do green veggie mix, which is, you know, broccoli and courgette. And then eventually you've actually got a mix coming, because the cubes from 2 weeks ago of butternut are now coming into the meal with the green veggie mix. So I really do think meal prep is something that is essential. And I think without doing meal prep, I think a mom would have to default to convenience foods for babies, which I really have an issue, particularly with the pouches that babies are given to just suck on. Cause I think I just think that there's some things that really are not favorable for long-term eating. And we see a lot of picky eating coming later because little ones are just fed these, you know, sucking pouches, which I really don't like. And different story if you're getting really good, wholesome, you know, kind of cubes from, you know, one of the lovely brands around. But I do think that you need to watch those convenience foods, and you can make your life easier by being organized. So talking about organization, you obviously have got a massive juggle today, because you obviously probably got a birthday party. You might have some cupcakes happening. What does your day look like for Aurelia's first birthday?
Yeah, I really should have taken the day off. You think I would have learned that the first time? Although, to be fair, Santi's first birthday was a much more low-key affair. I don't think the village was as established. So the reason that we're having a party this afternoon, we're having a family tea on Sunday, which is what we sort of would have done as standard. And that's what we always do in the family for the kids. But because Aurelia goes to the park every day, because her brother's there and Sissy's created these relationships with all these other little local families, I've now got 30 odd kids arriving this afternoon for a party, and I hadn't really factored it in. And I was awake last night. I mean, Aurelia had one of her nights last night, which is actually quite unusual. She's sleeping quite nicely, but last night, obviously, she decided she needed to be awake and screaming multiple times. And then I was lying awake thinking, oh, I actually haven't really applied my mind to this party and how many kids are actually going to be. And I can't just actually sit in my office and have them all out there screaming and running around. I'm actually going to have to do some work. So I've had to cancel a meeting and juggle my day around a little bit, but yeah, there's going to be, I baked the cupcakes last night, so that's done. I just have to ice them, although don't ask me when that's going to happen. And I've organized a few decorations, and I went yesterday and I did a little shop and I bought some little bits and pieces for the table. So it's a very low key, very chilled event. I'm not a kind of over the top party thrower. I don't really believe in it, quite frankly. But it's going to be very sweet, and it'll be nice to also kind of meet her little community that I don't get to know, because obviously they're always at the park together when I'm at work. So it's going to be very sweet, I'm sure.
Oh, that's very, very special. I must say, I think I fall into the category of the over the top party thrower. It's always been my thing to do these parties. And I'll never forget with James, my firstborn, being an OT, I decided that the whole theme of the party would be sensory. So there would be different sensory stations. We had a lot of friends who had firstborns the same year as we had James. We probably had about 8 or 9 1-year-olds at his birthday party. He was actually the oldest or second oldest. So majority of them were kind of between 6 months and 18 months. And I set up a whole lot of sensory stations, including like a little tub of rice with things in it and a little ball pond. And it was all home done. And the one thing that I did was I took a large bucket, like a large tub, and I chopped jelly into it. And like I had done like loads and loads of jelly in the fridge, and then I chopped them up into blocks, and I put out a jelly bucket, which of course probably now the E numbers and the sugar in there wasn't the best idea. But I mean, I'll never forget, one of my friends mentioned it to me the other day. I mean, I think people do have cake smash parties now for their firstborns. That wasn't a thing when James was born. He's 27 years old. So that was not a thing in those days. But that's pretty much what it ended up being. He upended that whole jelly on top of his head and ended up spending like 15 minutes playing in sticky jelly. And I think all the other parents were a little bit in shock, but he had the best day of his life. And so I have always gone a little bit overboard with birthday parties, but that was what his first birthday party was.
I mean, that sounds like an amazing party. I think being an OT and throwing a party is quite a different thing, because you obviously have lots of excellent ideas. I mean, my mum always used to throw actually the most wonderful parties, but they were never extravagant. And really, what they were, just a sort of a theme that she would bake a cake around. I don't know if you know about the Australian Women's Weekly birthday cake book. So we had that growing up, and I had all the one I have very fond memories of, there was a sweet shop cake. So I had a whole sweet shop party, and then everyone got given sort of 1 cent coins and they could buy sweets from little stand. I mean, it was so cute, but it was all very homemade and rustic. You know, there was nothing kind of over the top about it. But I, you know, and the rest of the party was spent running around the garden. And to be fair, that's kind of what happens with Santi's parties these days. There's always a jumping castle, but mainly it's running around the garden causing chaos, which, you know, they seem to love. So.
Yeah, and they absolutely do. And sometimes actually the over-executed parties are not the good ideas. And I've often felt, I mean, we did have the snake man come once for James, and we did have a fairy come once for Em. But by and large, most of our parties were actually quite similar to the one your mom threw. I once, back in the day for my youngest, what was her name? Something Flower Pot, the Flower Tots or something. I can't remember what the name was. Anyway, it was a TV program. And so we had a Flower Tots birthday, and what every little kid got was a little flower pot and soil and a little violet, and they got to actually plant up their own little flower pots. I've always done fun things, but they've been very homegrown. I'm not a big one for expecting on very fancy birthday parties, and
I love that. That's such a sweet idea.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great fun. Well, you're going on an amazing journey now, because I'm presuming she's going to start walking fairly soon. So.
Oh, I think it's round the corner. She's shame. She really is trying. She, I think it's a confidence thing at this point. She'll stand up from, you know, squatting, and then she'll think about it. She's done a couple of side steps, but she hasn't quite managed to go forward yet. But yeah, I do think it's around the corner. And she's definitely, you know, we are pushing her. I'm not going to lie. We're doing a lot of training, trying to encourage her to walk to us, but she will do it in her own time.
Yeah, and of course she's crawled so well that it's fine to now start encouraging walking as well. So that's absolutely amazing. Well, I know you've got a very busy day, Jules, and I appreciate you taking time out on the day that she turned one. And thank you for the journey. I know that the moms would love to continue the journey with you into the toddler years. So I don't think that this is the end of our conversations. But yeah, it is the end of the first year. So congratulations on getting there, mommy.
Thank you. Yes, I'm proud of myself for surviving. I won't lie.
Excellent. Thanks, Jules. Lovely to chat again, and we will chat again soon.
Cool. Thanks, Meg. So lovely to talk to you as always.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.